You're listening to a 790business.com podcast brought to you by Atlantic Paper. Call 800-613-0950 or visit atlanticpaper.com to find out how the Atlantic Advantage can make your life easier.
Your station for talk and business.
AM 790.
Now back to Patricia Raskin, Positive Business on AM 790. To talk with Patricia and her guest, call 437-5000 or toll free at 1-888-345-0790. And now back to Patricia Raskin.
Hi, everyone. We are back. And this is Positive Business, and I'm Patricia Raskin. We're here with terrific Marianne Snow, SophiaThinkConsulting.com, and she's going to be up at 4 o'clock, and we'll be talking about Google and what's happening there. Right now, what we're going to talk about is our mind and our brain, because in order to be good leaders, good business people, and successful, we really obviously have to develop some kind of practice in our brain. Otherwise, we become overworked, we become stressed, we forget things.
Less focused, our productivity goes down.
Right. And yeah. it happens to many of us, mm-hmm. particularly as we get busier. So our guest today is Rick Hansen, PhD, and he's the author of Buddha's Brain. He is a neuropsychologist. He's an affiliate of the Greater Good Science Center at University of California. And he's an invited speaker at Oxford, Harvard, and Stanford universities. And his new book is called Just One Thing, Developing a Buddha Brain, One Simple Practice at a Time. And what he's talking about is more than 50 practices designed to wire our brain for increased success, positive thinking in our work, also in our life. Welcome, Rick.
Hey, it's great to be here. Really, a pleasure.
Good. So glad. You know, one of the things that I was saying to you is that so many times at work, I mean, work is a good part of our life. And we separate work from home, but it's all part of the same thing. And so what I wanted to talk about is, what are some of the techniques that you suggest to people in business, in leadership roles, whether they're an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, whether they're a manager, or whether they're, you know, working a 9-to-5 job and have a great responsibility working with someone or reporting to someone? All of us can get stressed and overworked. Somebody might say something to us that upsets us and throws off our day. So what are some of the suggestions you have? And I know you were a management consultant for years, so you were right in this business setting.
That's right, in the trenches. Well, a couple of things. First, as you know, very well, both of you. The most single important factor in the success of a business and also or the success of any kind of enterprise is the level of functioning of the key leaders. Mm-hmm. And so what's interesting is to appreciate how brain science is now showing how people can literally do simple, easy things in a regular way that lifts the level of functioning of their own brain.
Oh.
And, you know, the brain is the basis of everything. It's really the hub of the wheel. So you change that. You lift the level of function of that. It's like a rising tide. It floats all boats.
Mm.
And there are a number of little practices in the book. That's why it's called Just One Thing. We're so busy these days. We just want to have one thing. Yeah, I did offer 52 so you could pick and choose
mm-hmm.
among them,
yeah,
including
yeah.
once a week if you want. But you really only need just one. And we can talk more, of course, about what some of those might
yeah,
be.
Yeah, give us one right now.
And remember that Patricia and I are both entrepreneurs, so we're crazy schedules, multitasking
yep.
all over the place.
Mine's going every minute. My
yeah.
mind goes every minute.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, that's exactly you are who I wrote this book for, because I know you. Because you know why? I am you. I mean, I'm a guy, but I'm the guy version. No, I really get it. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so In the trenches, what I have written about are really simple things to just kind of keep in the back of your mind 1, 2, 3 times a day, or bring out, you know, when the oatmeal starts to fly. For example, one of the great ways that's a simple brain trick for immediately dialing down your personal stress meter is to take 3 or more long exhalations. In other words, just take a breath, like even in a meeting, no one needs to know you're doing it, where you're exhaling twice as long as you're inhaling. That alone will activate what's called the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the calming, soothing, refueling wing of the nervous system, which dials down the stress response, fight or flight, sympathetic wing of the nervous system. Mm-hmm. So just that right there, boom, cools the fires, which is one of my little chapters. It helps you relax and immediately changes things for the better. That would be one. I'll give you a second one real fast.
Okay.
Take in the good. You know, the brain is the product of 600 million years of evolution under really harsh conditions, and Mother Nature does not care about happiness. She only cares about gene copies. So we've got a brain that's wired for negativity because that's where survival really mattered back in the day. It's like Velcro for the negative and Teflon for the positive, as I say. So the effect of that is that we remember negative experiences forever in emotional memory. They go right in. But positive experiences flow through the brain like water through a sieve.
So what a
business leader can do is to deliberately take 10 seconds, 10, 20, 30 seconds at most, when a simple positive experience is available. Something good has happened, flowers are blooming, you got something done at work, you managed to avoid a challenge, you ain't dead yet, right? Anything. And 3-4 times a day, take those 15 seconds to savor the experience. Just quietly, again, no one needs to know you're doing this, savor it. And if you do that, because of the famous saying from brain science, neurons that fire together, wire together, if you do that, you will be weaving those resources, those key strengths, into the fabric of your brain and yourself.
All right, say that again, what you said about the fire and the wire. Say that again.
Yeah, famous saying from neuroscience, neurons that fire together, wire together.
Nice.
Interesting.
In other words, it's a great saying, and it really drills the point home that what we do with our mind, you know, what we think about, what we feel, what we do with our attention, honestly, if we do indulge the kind of hamster wheel spinning that we were all honestly confessing to a few minutes ago of mental spinning, what that does is it just builds habit patterns in the brain. The brain's a learning organ, for better or worse. You know, you rest it on hamster wheel distractibility, you rest it on self-doubt, you rest it on resentments about other people or feeling like a victim. Guess what? Your brain will take that shape. If you do what I've said, rest it on things that are positive, it'll take a different shape over time. And you can have confidence in that.
And what's interesting about that, and I'm sure, Marianne, I don't know if you're guilty of this, but I am, you know, it's so easy to look at everything you do and then the one comment that someone makes to you that doesn't work. You know, you say, oh, I blew it, rather than looking at all the good things. And I'll give you an example because I have a business coach, and I was talking to him about a letter that I've written to many business owners, and I didn't quite get the response I wanted. And, you know, I started with the beating myself up. And by the end of the conversation, we had turned that around. And we said, well, you know what? Let's write a different letter. Let's try something different because we've got something here. We may just not have offered the right thing or in the right way. And when he finished, I said, oh, you know, and I wouldn't have thought of that, Rick, because I was too busy with, oh, I didn't get the response. I wasn't even thinking about how could we rewrite that, write a different letter and say, you know, I just wrote you, but now I have something different to offer you. So that's what I think you're talking about, is that sometimes the negative clouds the positive, so we don't think of another alternative.
So I know we only have a couple of minutes, Rick, before we're coming up to a break. But during the break, I want you to chew over something. I had an old colleague, I haven't seen him probably in 6-7 years, contact me. He's in job transition, so he wanted some career advice. And when I talked to him, he immediately started talking about something that happened when he and I worked together, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And it's exactly what you're talking about. Stuck on a bad thing and talking about it like it was yesterday, like it's so fresh for him and so current that it's coloring everything. So when we come back, I want some advice for how to handle him.
Okay,
all right.
Good.
Do you have to, well, we have a minute. So Rick, can you give us a comment on what I said about kind of not going to the positive side because I was stuck, and about Marianne's comment about the negative with the colleague?
Right. Well, two things. First, you're exactly right. We do tend to remember the negative. There's a study, there's a lot of research actually that shows that it takes usually 5 positive interactions with someone to balance 1 negative one.
Wow.
Or there's a famous saying in business, I'll paraphrase it, you know, it takes, you know, 10 contacts to win a customer. It takes only 1 bad contact to lose them.
All right. We're going to finish
thinking about
it.
We'll be right back.
Right. We'll be right back. So, folks, be thinking about what worked in your day rather than the thing that didn't work. You're listening to Positive Business. I'm Patricia Raskin, right here on AM 790 with my terrific co-host, Marianne Snow, and our guest, neuropsychologist Rick Hansen. His book is One Thing, Just One Thing. Stay tuned. Hi, everyone. We're back. You're listening to Positive Business, and I'm Patricia Raskin. We're here with my terrific co-host, Marianne Snow, who's up in the 4 o'clock hour talking about Google and her amazing social media techniques, so don't miss it. Welcome, Marianne. And we have with us on the phone from California, Dr. Rick Hansen, who is a neuropsychologist. He's the founder of Wellspring Institute for Neuroscience and Contemplative Wisdom. He's the author of Buddha's Brain, and his newest book is Just One Thing, Developing a Buddha Brain, One Simple Practice at a Time, with more than 50 practices designed to wire the brain for increased positive thinking and success. Welcome back, Rick.
Great. Pleasure to be here.
All right. Thanks. And folks, we're going to give out the number, 437-5000 or 888-345-0790. If you're a little stuck in that negative thinking at work and you're working with someone and, you know, they're just not, and you've tried a lot of things and it's not working, call up, give us the example, and Rick will help you reframe it or show you some techniques you can do to kind of let it settle so that you can go back in another way. Because that's what we need to do in business and often in our life as well, in our personal life. 437-5000, 888-345-0790. So, Rick, we were talking about two different things here. I gave the example of how, you know, I had sent out a letter and I didn't get the response I wanted and I was stuck there. And then I had a coach help me strategize. Marianne talks about how she was with someone who she had a negative experience with several years ago. And fast forward several years, he's still talking about that. So give us some strategy.
Sure. On the first one, I think it helps people to realize that the brain has a lot of features that were advantages, a million years ago, but today, in effect, are design flaws. And one of them is that we hyper-focus on anything negative out of a larger set, if you will, or of information. Like, life's like a mosaic. And, you know, imagine a big mosaic, 1,000 tiles. The brain locks onto the one tile out of 1,000. That's the bad news. So anytime you start to feel stressed or activated, because that will start tipping that brain into its negative setting, if you will, anytime you feel stressed or activated or upset in any way, irritated, frazzled, anxious, and so forth, try to make yourself widen your view. Back out. Imagine the bird's eye view, the 30,000-foot view from the airplane passing overhead. What do you see when you see the big picture? Including, in particular, make yourself recognize the many positive facts that are on the ground, including opportunities. You know, the brain is biased to usually overestimate threats, underestimate opportunities, and underestimate resources for fulfilling opportunities. So to correct that bias, we need to tilt in the other direction, like you chose, like yours, just to level the playing field.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then Marianne,
mine was, I want to help my friend.
Yeah.
He's talking about an incident that happened between him and the organization the two of us worked for, and he still wants to relive it with me, and I want to help him get off of that and get on to positive things, because he's about to go into a job search, so yeah. I want him in the right place.
Right. I think there it's a little bit tricky because, people grieve or mourn in different ways. I think often what helps is to listen compassionately for a few minutes and then basically say, okay, it seems like that's the way it is. Okay, now where do you want to go with your life from this point forward? In other words, the interesting thing is that we are utterly helpless about changing either the past or this moment of the present. Mm-hmm. But what we can influence is the next few minutes. And they have a nice saying in Tibet, if you take care of the minutes, the years will take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. So if we keep focusing on the next few minutes right in front of our nose that we are primarily accountable for, no one else in the world can do this for us, those minutes will add up into wonderful years, down the road.
All right, so I'm going to ask a question that I think a caller would ask. All right, I'm going to ask the question that I asked the caller to call in with. So here's the question. This is generic. So folks, be thinking out there if this is your situation. You're a manager, or someone's working with you or for you, and you're having difficulty communicating with them, they either don't want to hear it, or they change the subject, or you're afraid they'll become, you know, very angry and defensive, and you can't, whatever you're hitting, it's a hot button, and they don't want to talk about this. Rick, what suggestions do you have?
Great question. Well, I'm a practicing therapist, so it sounds like a lot of couples I've worked with.
Yeah.
I think, for one, if...
You stumped him, Patricia.
No, I didn't.
Well, no. Yeah, I didn't want to give any answer to this lesson an hour long. But anyway, so a couple things. Yeah. For one, take care of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the smart move is to slow it all down. That's a great advice in general. Slow it down. Buy yourself the great gift of time. You know, most of the time we get in trouble, it's in a speeded-up situation. Try to slow it down. Observe. What's going on here? Back away if you need to. Disengage. I mean, or sometimes a lot of people just cannot. It's not the moment for them. Or they're very caught up in some way. Or frankly, they just have diminished capacity in some regard to hear what we have to say.
Mm.
Another thing I think that helps people is to really check our own attitude. Oftentimes, when we're bringing something to another person, we're frankly, we've got a trip. That's California talk. You know, we've got some kind of position or agenda, even a benevolent agenda, but we've got some energy behind what we're trying to do. And that's really worth looking at. Is it really benevolent? You know, or am I myself getting caught up in the momentum here? And then I think another really great structure, your listeners may well know it already, is found in what's called nonviolent communication. It's a very simple formula. When X happens, I feel Y because I need Z, pure and simple. And X is described very objectively, not when you are a jerk, I feel mad, but no, when you come home late to dinner for the third time this week, or when you don't get your report in on time like you said you would, I feel such and such because I need such.
And usually, isn't it around feeling discounted in some way?
Very often, or suddenly you feel anxious. Anxious, and fear was the very first emotion the brain evolved. So if we're dealing with people who are not reliable or who, you know, in a more profound way, don't seem to be motivated to ever become reliable and trustworthy with us, that raises anxieties, and that's often what really becomes on the table.
And you know, to your point, it's the part of this is physiological because you have adrenaline and cortisol production, and, you know, so this by definition is not healthy in our bloodstream.
Right. I try to help myself remember that what's happening in this moment in the other person's mind is the result of 10,000 causes upstream, which most of which don't have that person's name tag on them. Just stuff. The economy, the world, genetics, gender, upbringing, your parents' parents, and so forth. It's, you know, my dad grew up on a ranch in North Dakota in the Depression. You know, it's some of those influences have woven through me, and they show up in how I deal with my kids, I'm sure. So, you know, and so it gives us a certain balance, a certain equanimity, if you will, where it doesn't mean we waive our rights, doesn't mean we go all zen on the other person, but it means that we can see what's happening in a larger frame.
Right. Now, sorry, Patricia, I want to jump in and talk about how you can use these techniques to, you know, oftentimes in business meetings, things can be kind of stressful, kind of contentious, particularly if you've got, you know, teams that are multidisciplinary and, you know, they don't all speak the same language. And people tend to personalize when things start to escalate. So how do you start using these techniques to kind of, you know, walk people off the edge and to prevent teams from going down bad paths?
Yeah, I'll give you several, and I'll do it kind of quickly. And again, these are little practices. I don't claim any ownership of any of them, frankly, although a few of them I've probably innovated around. But the point is that you can do them, and they're very designed by brain science. So, one, notice you're actually all right now. I mean, again, the brain is biased toward fear. It's continually scanning for threat. Usually it's a paper tiger, not a real one out there. And it really helps to appreciate moment after moment that in this meeting, even if those other people are kind of getting uptight, or even honestly, if we're not attaining the agenda, in the larger perspective of a lifespan, you're actually basically all right now. You're not having a health problem right now. You're not about to get fired right now. No one's about to hit you right now. This is not a career-ending meeting. Mm-hmm. You're actually okay right now. Just letting that sink in, you know, having it be felt, not intellectual, but felt, really will change the body over time. And because neurons that fire together wire together, you'll gradually internalize that growing sense of inner strength.
And Rick, what about mindfulness in all of this? Because I think that's probably where you're going next in terms of what this does for the brain when you are mindful.
Well, to go to Marianne's point, you've got to be mindful, first of all, of what's happening in the meeting, you know, that you're getting revved up.
Right.
And you need to be mindful to sustain attention. Attention is the gateway, obviously, to changing the brain, because the brain really changes its structure for whatever we give focused attention to. It turbocharges what's called experience-dependent neuroplasticity. So, to Marianne's point, if you're in a meeting like that, you can really be mindful of whether you're doing your little practices, right, and how those little practices are going. And if I could, I'll tell you another one that I think is really helpful in a situation like that, which is I call it take refuge. In other words, tap into your go-tos that help you feel strong and capable. You know, for me, I've done a lot of rock climbing and wilderness things, so I just recall experiences of pulling over a ledge, or I've been involved in situations where I had to come through for other people and kind of be both strong and calm. That's the sweet spot, isn't it? Strong, compassionate, and calm. And so I kind of pull up. I tap my inner iPod. You know, I start playing that inner song, rock climbing, strong, clear, and calm, you know. And then that really helps me in that meeting. So that's taking refuge, in a sense, in some felt memory, like a body experience that's really a strong resource for you. And then if you want, I'll tell you one more really fast.
Okay.
Speaking of rock climbing, I call it aspire without attachment. And this is a tricky one, because we've got a culture in America, both in the West, but especially in America, that can get extremely driven and very attached to results.
Yep.
And I'm all for ambition, passion, commitment, but guess what? Most of the factors that determine outcome are outside our hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very struck by the finding from marketing that after spending millions of dollars on market research, 2 out of 3 of the new products that get rolled out for supermarket shelves will not be there in a year because they just didn't work out for all kinds of reasons. Yeah. So let's be realistic. So the point is to aspire, to dream big dreams, to aim strongly for things while being fundamentally at peace with whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're actually much more likely to attain your goal, because you're able to do it, you know, with a relatively peaceful heart.
I have found that, but that's a challenge for me, because, you know, it's so easy to be, will this work? What if it doesn't? Maybe I should make another call. Maybe, you know, it's always I should do something. And as you said, many times it doesn't matter. I mean, sometimes it does matter, Rick, but many times you've done what you can, and now you have to let it take its own course.
Yeah, I get so inspired by this little quote, this kid named Nkosi. He was born with HIV in South Africa. A mother, you know, was a prostitute. She died soon. He comes into the world with HIV. It's incurable. He died when he was about 12 years old, and he became a spokesman for kids with HIV in South Africa. And he had a saying. His saying is simply, do what you can in the place where you are with what you've been given in the time that you have.
Oh. That's beautiful.
Oh, man.
That's like no dry eyes in the house.
All right, say that one more time, and then we're going to close.
Yeah. Do what you can in the place where you are with what you've been given in the time that you have.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Rick.
Pleasure.
Thanks for coming on the program. Rick
Such
Hansen,
a pleasure.
Author of Just One Thing. How can people find you?
Oh, anywhere. My website, rickhansonson.net, is full of great free resources, and Just One Thing, I think, is $11 at most on Amazon.
All right, Just One Thing, rickhansen.com, right?
S-O-N, no, .net.
.net, rickhansen.net. Thanks so much, Rick. Stay on the line
for
a minute. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for your inspiration today. All right, and up next is our own Marianne Snow. We're going to talk about Google and about all kinds of things, so stay tuned. And then up after this, we'll be talking about telephone lines with
Rhode
Island Health. Very interesting.
Voice over IP
systems. Absolutely. You're listening.